Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
All right, here we go on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp. We got Q producing the show today, the rest of the week. Drew chilling on the beach. I hope he's just having some strawberry margaritas or daiquiris or something.
You know, if he's having a drink, it's a fruity one. That's Drew.
In fairness, on the beach, man, nothing wrong with that. On the beach, that's exactly what you should be having. You know, why not? Sit back,
relax.
You
think it should be like a big pina colada?
Yeah, I think that's the beach vibes that you're looking for. So I saw he sent out one tweet. I think Speck told him, hey, don't tweet on vacation. And then he sent out one tweet to say that Bobby should be MVP. And he said, sorry, Speck. And he tagged Speck. And Speck said, that one we'll let slide. I think Speck said, hey man, just don't even tweet, don't worry about it, just enjoy vacation, you know,
don't bother yourself. That's what he's saying. It sounded like
that's what happened.
Live your life. He also sent out a quote tweet about the song that came out on the show yesterday, so he couldn't help himself a couple of times. Uh-huh. Look, I'm sure you look at Twitter on vacation every once in a while.
Yeah, I can't help it.
I look at it way less. I'm just on my phone way less when I'm on vacation.
Sure. Well, if I'm at the beach, it depends on where you're, like, are you on a road trip where you're in the car and you're not driving, and so you're just gonna be, or are you actually on vacation chilling at the beach or doing things and all that. But thinking of things we got going on today and what we're up to, just a 2-hour show as the Royals looking for a sweep this afternoon in Chicago on the south side Chicago. There Brady Singer on the bump, Vern's on deck show. He's gonna take over at noon to get you set for this series finale and season finale against the White Sox, at least last time they'll play Chicago, which is very sad. Unfortunately, you don't get to play the White Sox anymore after today. We're going to be joined by the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, JJ Piccolo, here in 30 minutes. Cannot wait to have him join us. A ton to discuss. The trade deadline, we all know, wrapped up. Some of the thought process, we want to kind of figure out a little bit more how they approach the deadline. The three arms that they ultimately added, plus Paul DeJong, who's going to be in the lineup, it sounds like, with Q telling the guys this morning that he will make his Royals debut against his old team. Yesterday was a crazy day, so I'm not surprised that would have been nuts if he was in the lineup at all yesterday.
Plus, it's weird enough to just like walk across the parking lot.
They want him against lefties too. My guess is that's also what we'll see. But we'll talk to JJ in about 30 minutes. You guys can interact with us on the Jay's Southland Tow Service text line 913-586-7610. So let's talk about that trade deadline that is in the rearview mirror now. We both thought on the show yesterday that they would have another move or two. Ended up being two moves before the deadline. And ultimately, in its entirety, three arms, if you go back to the Hunter Harvey acquisition.
Yes.
And then one, I'll call it a small bat. Like a small bat.
A bench bat is probably how I would describe it at the moment, unless JJ is going to tell us something different here in 20 minutes.
I think he would get an opportunity to go against lefties if he's hitting consistently, and he gives him some pop off the bench.
He does.
He's got 18 homers, which is third on the team already.
Yeah.
So that means I would look, if I'm going to have a bench guy that is going to pinch hit against a lefty or something, obviously you'd rather have the guy have some pop. They didn't really have that.
Because every single guy who comes in to pinch hit is Garrett Hampson. And I'm like, or Dyron Blanco typically comes in to run. But you're like, that's no power. I want actual bench power. Someone who might be able to put a ball over the fence. And that's pretty much what DeYoung's good for at the moment. Look, it is not a good bat. They didn't add Lane Thomas. He's got like a 270 on base percentage. He's not going to take a walk. They didn't add some like world beating hitter, but they got deeper on the bench. They found somebody who can slug a home run every once in a while. More importantly is the pitching. Did they make their pitching good enough to make me feel comfortable with it? But I think if you look at a cost benefit analysis, I think it's really hard to complain. Look at what they gave up and what they got in return. 5 years of control out of the Oakland reliever. They get a couple of years, a year and a half out of Harvey. And then, yeah, Lorenzen, they're not going to get the kind of control they want, but they're also getting a split starter bullpen arm across it. They were doing it about control. I don't think they overpaid. I thought tons of teams did. I do not think they overpaid for what they got back in this deadline.
And that was walking the line we kind of discussed yesterday, like showing that you're aggressive supporting your current club. That is exceeded expectations, that is currently occupying a playoff spot. We all know the bullpen for months has been a necessity, and so they got three new arms. Was it the best closer available? No, but they got three arms, and so they did a good job balancing, improving the team. We'll find out to what extent in the final 2 months of the season, and not just for this year. You know, of the three arms, as you said, Cody, two of them will be helping this team in the future as well. In Hunter Harvey, and then beyond that for Urseg. That's what's nice about that. And I know people initially were kind of based off of the control that they were getting from Urseg, that maybe they gave up multiple top end prospects. They gave up some pieces, but none that
I think... some guys in their top 20.
Some guys they gave up, though. None that you're like, oh my gosh, this is really jeopardizing the future. I thought they did a good job threading the needle of where they needed to be to improve the team, but also recognizing that it's not as if this is the year it all has to happen. If you don't make the move this year, then it's never going to happen again for 3 years. No, like, two of these guys are going to help them maybe get to the postseason next year as well. So that's why I like the moves. As far as the bat, yeah, I mean, look, they gave up a literal lottery ticket almost from a high A player. Who knows? Right? And so why? No, nobody should be too concerned about Paul DeYoung and what they gave up. I mean, they're all lottery tickets to a certain extent. When you're talking about someone in high A ball, that's definitely what that is.
Yeah, and
was it Rosado or something? I think they gave up.
Here's the thing:
how many of the guests?
I've never heard of him. I cover this team for a living, so
out of all the players they gave away in the moves they made, the three arms and the one bat, so the four moves they made that technically are part of the trade deadline. There's maybe three: Caden Wallace, Will Klein, and one other guy that I actually recognize the name.
They're like, oh, okay.
Other than that, they didn't say
Blake Mitchell, so you're like, well, I'll live my life, right? At least on that end. But no, you could not tell me they gave up too much. The other part about this is you can't simultaneously tell me that their farm system stinks and then be upset when like number 19 in the Baseball America re-rankings gold is the guy who went away. Like, am I supposed to panic based on that information? You just told me that their system's no good. So, like, why would I get overly concerned at this exact moment that that's the case? No, they did not overpay. They did what I think both you and I wanted, which was dip your toe in the water. This team can win, so I would prefer that you not ignore them, but also don't start selling every bit of your future in order to do this thing. That's all we asked them to do, right? Like, I can't even complain. Now, the real question is how much more likely do you think they are to actually make the postseason based on this? Kind of depends on how these guys, I think it's so hard to say because, like, to this point, are you, like, over the moon with what you've seen out of Harvey?
No, look, I think the moves they made, they're moves that can make them slightly better as they get further into the month of August and into September. I don't think anybody believes the moves are flat out, fixing every single issue that they had. I don't think that existed without looking at the other players that were moved and seeing the compensation without truly jeopardizing the future and what is a farm system that is still working its way back. and that had been depleted and that needed to be built back up. And I think they're making progress in doing that, but they weren't ready to move some of those pieces that could have probably botched you the Tanner Scotts or whoever you wanted. Sure. That would have been a closer that would have come in and said, wow, okay.
Now they're better.
Completely solved. I don't think everything is suddenly solved, but I definitely think the moves they made were the area that was most concerning to me, bullpen. And when you add three arms, we talked at the beginning of June and said, hey, they're going to add a couple arms to the bullpen. They added three. I don't know what more you could have wanted in terms of what they had in the bullpen, other than flat out saying they should have just traded for one and got the best possible closer. Well, then you're probably giving up your number two prospect and your number three prospect in the system to do that. In a system that your number two is probably like a number six in some other organizations.
Yeah, what we're talking about is options. They gave you options for who ends up being the back end. Do they have it all figured out yet, Gold? Absolutely not. They don't. I cannot tell you who 7, 8, and 9 were. I'll be honest. Last night, it's a one-run game against the Chicago White Sox, and my brothers were texting me, and he's like, is MacArthur? Please tell me it's not going to be MacArthur. I'm like, well, he came into close last night, so I can't tell you it's not going to be James MacArthur who comes into this game for the save. And instead, it's Sam Long. And if you're going to throw a lefty in a save situation, I kind of thought it was going to be Bubich.
Yeah, Bubich was warming up.
He was.
Yeah.
So the truth is, I don't know who their 7th, 8th, and 9th inning guys are right now. Because between the additions they made yesterday and the addition of Hunter Harvey a couple of weeks ago, I'm not sure what the back end of the high leverage part of their bullpen is. We'll talk to JJ Piccolo in 20 minutes. He said nice things about some of the additions, including some of them could be back end arms. But does that mean now? Does that mean this second? Does that mean they do that this second? And so
it's
kind of a mystery. They're going to have to figure it out the way they've been figuring it out all year.
They need to be matchup driven for a while until they get a better grasp on who that can be. I mean, I don't think suddenly Sam Long is your closer just because last night he was impressive. He was like props to him, right? It's a couple strikeouts. That was really nice to see. I don't think suddenly now everybody's feeling great that he's just the closer for the team. It's going to take more and more opportunities for him in those spots. If in fact, but I let's say today there's a closing opportunity. Would it stun you if they go back to MacArthur?
No.
No. And we talked about this. It's not as simple as, hey, the ninth inning, yes, that is who gets the save in that circumstance. But Hunter Harvey, once again, was in the highest leverage spot of the baseball game yesterday. He pitched in the eighth against the top of the order. I know he gave up a run, right? Got dicey. The one benefit what you have with Hunter Harvey, and I know the one run, fortunately, they got the insurance run.
They did.
From Bobby running around from third base and the White Sox through to second.
We can talk about that in a minute. Because, funny.
Thank you, Chicago. Thank you, Chicago. But Hunter Harvey faced the top of the order, and then he was still able to get out of the jam. Why, Cody? The reason they acquired him. Because they needed a pitcher with strikeout stuff. That's the issue with some of the other guys. If MacArthur or some other guys get in a jam like that, they haven't shown the ability to get the strikeout to get out of it. So Hunter Harvey, yes, it's you don't like seeing him put himself in that spot, but he has the stuff to get out of it. And that's what happened last night, in my opinion, from watching Hunter Harvey.
Yeah, I think that's probably. But again, if you can get out of it in some way, we talk about this all the time. I do not expect any bullpen arm for this Royals team or any team for the most part to just go out there and Wade Davis their way through zeros. Zero, zero, zero. They're occasionally going to give up a run. The complaint you and I, the only complaint I've had to this point, not the only, but like the biggest complaint I've had about MacArthur to this point is it's never just one run. It's four or five. If you could have just made the other night one run, we weren't even probably coming into the show complaining about it. But it wasn't one run, or in Sam Long's case a couple of nights ago, he gave up the hit that was, and look, he didn't put men on first, second, and third, but he gave up the hit. Let them all come home. And so the bullpen still has a lot to figure out. I do think that they have a better chance to make the postseason than they did 3 weeks ago because the weakest part of their team is now, I don't know, 10% better. Like, I don't know that it's some big swing goal. They're not way, way, way better than they were 2 weeks ago, but they are 10% better out of the bullpen than they were 2 weeks ago, which was the weakest unit on their entire squad. So I'll take the win. They're deeper on the bench. They got a better chance of hitting some 7th or 8th inning home run. He also provides Michael Massey insurance from the what happens if Michael Massey's back acts up.
True.
Where are we going to find power from in this lineup? Well, maybe from him. Look, it's not the guy you want in every day, I don't think. Because I saw this to me, like, why wouldn't he just start every day? He's better than Frazier or Hampson or some of these other guys get a lot of time for the Royals. I'm like, is he? He just hits more home runs. And I understand teams have always traded that. That's why Joey Gallo had a nice long career in Major League Baseball. But there are other benefits to the type of play that they do, and DeJong makes them deeper as a lineup, but none of this made them infinitely better. They were careful.
Well, I think they were smart moves. Smart moves in the logic behind each move actually makes a ton of sense. They didn't jeopardize the
future. Overpay.
They didn't jeopardize the future, and I think that was the perfect balance, and I think that's how they approached this, and the market was a seller's market. And it was pretty clear there was a level to which they were willing to go. I don't deny that or doubt that they were interested in Jazz Chisholm, that they were interested in the other pieces. But when you start to compete against the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Orioles, these teams that have much deeper farm systems right now and are also just in a different spot as an organization,
you have
to approach it a tad bit differently. We all know, and if this was 2015, where it was like, man, you were just in the World Series the year before, and so you were already there, and you only had maybe a year left with Hosmer and all the guys, you were willing to be way more aggressive at the deadline then. Right now, it doesn't appear, even if we think Seth Lugo next year won't be as good as he is this year, career year, everything's not just falling apart after this year.
No.
So why jeopardize pieces of the future when next year you're in a similar spot and two of the pieces you acquired could help you next year as well?
We've talked about this before. What happened to the last group of Royals players who kind of got used to losing, and that Michael Massey after the game yesterday was talking a little bit about being on the other side of this, because the Texan, I see it like, I'm just glad that we're talking about in July, the Royals adding and not subtracting. You watched what the Marlins did yesterday.
9 players.
The White Sox. The Marlins were, as a reminder for anybody who doesn't follow baseball regularly or haven't been for the last couple of years, the Marlins were in the postseason last year. There's a graphic somebody pointed out of them. It's like, postseason vibes! And they just put X's on the players who are no longer on that roster, and it's like 60% of it. But Michael Massey kind of pointed out this thing of like, we believe in you. We believe you can win. You are winners. That means something. This was Massey on being on the other side of trades yesterday.
Does being buyers at the deadline invigorate you guys at all, being able to add major league pieces?
Yeah, I mean, this is my first experience with it, so it's a heck of a lot better than being a seller and seeing guys go. And, obviously being in a position we are is a lot better than where we were last year. So just excited for the last couple months here and ready to compete.
A lot better than seeing guys go. The idea of, we believe in you, we're putting faith in you once again. This whole year's been about that. Remember in the offseason, we're like, I mean, they're telling this team they think they can win. Went after Lugo, went after Walker, the trade for Reagans last year, they get Bobby all this money. They were trying to prove to this team they were serious.
Yeah, I think the trade deadline moves mimic how they have, to your point, approached this entire calendar year. And the offseason and what they needed to do in that, last year, the 56-win season, that, the evaluation year and all that, that was something that they just couldn't happen again. And so they made moves, and they also were, I don't want to call it luck. They obviously knew what they were talking about when it came to scouting, but they hit on every move in the offseason. I mean, they really did.
Even though people were complaining early about Renfro, and he's been fantastic for the last 2.5 months.
He's been a big piece. I mean, honestly, they hit on every move in the offseason, truly. I guess if you're going to nitpick, you would say, I guess the Will Smith acquisition, even though he's been a huge clubhouse guy, he hasn't panned out the way you would have wanted.
Yeah, the clubhouse part of it, though, right? Makes that a little bit. Big. Everybody mentions him still about the clubhouse stuff.
He's one of the 2-3 biggest leaders in the clubhouse for the team. So I think the offseason moves definitely set the tone for the year. And then they've continued that same aggressive nature with the trade deadline. And there's always gonna be people that complain no matter what you do at the deadline. If they would have got Tanner Scott or whoever, people would have said, oh, should not have given away everybody. And then that, you're never gonna make everybody happy. I think they did a good balance of how they approached the offseason into this trade deadline. And now here we go, man. Trade deadline's in the rearview mirror. August is tomorrow. All right. August is tomorrow. This team currently occupies a wild card spot. They gained some ground on the Twins yesterday.
That was big. Twins losing again. So they're tied for the second wild card spot, like you said.
Get yourself a little gap ahead of the teams even behind the Red Sox. That'd be like the Astros or the Mariners, whoever wins that or doesn't win that divisional.
Currently, I think the Mariners are in first.
Yeah, the Astros have fallen off a little bit.
I don't want the Astros in there. you and I were doing the, like, this is the fun part about it. It's July, what, 31st? So August tomorrow. So, I mean, there's, you know, 2 months left in the season. But you and I were starting to have the conversation of, like, are you sure you wouldn't rather be the sixth seed in the playoffs than the five? Because if you're the five, you know, you got to take on the Orioles or the Yankees. If you're the six,
it crossed
you're
going to
take on Seattle or Houston, a much better situation.
It crossed our mind. It's early for that. It is. And let's just get in the dance here. But, yeah, I mean, it will be more of a conversation that we would gladly have on air more in September if they're in that spot. But, yeah, I think it's something that we definitely have noticed a little bit. And like, okay. You can start getting greedy when it comes to that.
We haven't talked enough about how Will Smith did not get traded at the deadline and how often he's been on the most recent World Series winning team, you know? That's the other part of it. He's been on three straight winners, right? He's won two or three straight
Astros,
World Series. Astros, Rangers, and Atlanta the year before. Yeah, he's won three straight World Series, and he didn't get traded. Still with the squad, hanging on.
Start buying those World Series. Go ahead and start buying World Series tickets
Will
in advance.
Smith's still on the team.
Secondary market. Just go ahead and start buying them.
Would that be the most miraculous 4-year run in player history? To be on four separate teams and win the World Series with all four teams? It wouldn't even make any sense.
I mean, has it even happened ever
three straight
with
times?
Three other than him?
Probably not.
Because there's no way it's happened for four straight years for a random player to be traded and be in four straight World Series,
no.
Let alone win them.
No.
Even be in them.
Impossible. Impossible.
Yeah, there's no way that's happened.
It doesn't.
Four times.
It defies all logic. He's just he just wins World Series, man. What can you say? Will Smith, you know, by the way, he has the identical ERA as he had last year for the Rangers. So I don't think you got sold a misdeed on Will Smith. You just kind of got what Will Smith is. His career ERA is 3.71. He's got a 4.41 ERA this year. He's like pretty much who he is. Like, he's got some lower areas in his early 20s, but this is pretty much who Will Smith has been the last, like, 7 years.
The one thing, though, looking at the rest of the way, we know that the schedule will toughen up here a little bit after the White Sox and the Tigers now. You don't have to worry about Flaherty. He gets traded,
Nixed last night?
Did it?
I think it got canceled because of medicals.
Oh, he did get traded, and then he did. You're saying that he didn't pass the physical?
I think he didn't pass the physical, and late last night.
Oh, I did not see that. All I saw is he got traded, and then
maybe it went through.
No, you're probably right. I thought it happened, but I was under the impression that he got traded to the Dodgers.
I saw that there was like some issues with the medicals, and now maybe I'm seeing it wrong.
I mean, 17 hours ago, Passan said Flaherty to the Dodgers, but
oh no, he did. He did go to the Yankees, but the Yankees backed out of a trade because of the
Yankees
medical
or
concerns.
Dodgers.
The Dodgers actually traded for him. The Yankees had a trade, backed out due to medical
concerns.
Okay,
so Flaherty did get traded to the Dodgers.
You're right.
All right, so point being, you scared me for a second.
No. I was like, God, I remembered seeing it. I couldn't remember which team it was.
Flaherty not being with the Tigers, what I was getting at is like, okay, so now you play the Tigers after this series, and you're not going to deal with Flaherty because he got traded to the Dodgers. And so, okay, that's a series,
that helps.
Tigers team that is, they didn't trade Skubal, though. He's still with the...
They're kind of stuck in no man's land.
They have a bunch of young, really good young pitching still, the Tigers too. So I was surprised they didn't move them. But no, looking at like this, you're going to play a ton more games on the road here going forward.
And that's been a weak spot for this team.
And that's where they're going to have to make their biggest adjustment, I think. They've been so good at home. And now, can they get it done on the road against some quality teams? You're going to have the Tigers before I think you take on Boston again.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so. Again, all we asked was them. I told you, I just didn't want the Boston series to be, if you lose this series, you're no longer in a playoff spot. They've set themselves up decently for that in the early going with a 2-game lead and now in a tie with the Twins for that second wild card spot. And I know people have been picking on them, because they, you know, they're like, oh, all they're doing is beating the White Sox. 'Cause I get it. They are 10 games above 500 against the White Sox. They are 10-1 currently. So I guess 9 games above 500 against the White Sox. And that is the number of games they are above 500. Okay, pretty much. They are 10 games above 500. They're 59-49. So you're like, all they do is beat the White Sox. I don't care. I don't care if they go 500 against every other team in baseball up to this point. They will have to be slightly better than that moving forward, though. If they went 500 the rest of the way, they would finish with 86 wins.
I don't think that's enough.
I don't think 86 wins will get him there. But
I think
also,
you need 88 to get. I think you at least need 88 to be a wild card this year.
But they didn't just beat the White Sox. You know, they didn't just like, oh, they were better against the White Sox and then miserable against everyone else. They hammered them. They're 10-1 against this team. They took them to the woodshed. I mean, they shouldn't apologize.
Thank goodness they need it. Thank goodness
they
need it though. You know, that's that.
But the rest of this division was supposed to be worse than this.
Yeah, the AL Central has been a laughingstock league division for a while. And credit all the teams, I guess. You know, they've upped their game, right? They've done a good job building their teams back up. And now this is shaping up to be a division that's going to be really competitive, not just this year, because it clearly has been, but moving forward, right? I mean, you start looking at the Royals and the situation they're in next year. No reason to believe that they're not going to be in a similar spot, if not maybe better. The Guardians have established themselves. They'll also get Bieber back next year. Like, Stephen Kwan's not going anywhere. Like, they're going to be...
Jose Ramirez, they got some stars.
The Tigers, I think they still have some really good young pitching. The Twins are always just kind of in it, you know? So this division is going to be really competitive, and it's going to be more challenging than we thought for the Royals over the next couple of years. To like, we were like, oh, it's easy. You know, the great thing is it doesn't take much to suddenly be in first place in the Central. Unfortunately, that's not the case right now anymore. It's not the AL East. I'm not saying it's the AL East, but the thought of like, oh, if you get to 85 wins, you might be in first. I don't think this year it's definitely not going
to
be that.
This is kind of why baseball had to make the shift to the extra playoff teams, because before, only six teams at, you know, like six teams in each league out of 30, 12 out of, you know, like, that's it. That's all we were getting in the postseason, less than 50%. And I think that number had just gotten too low. The extra playoff spot really helps them. Because right now, otherwise, we'd have just been talking about, finally, they're tied for the final playoff spot. And you're like, no, they've been in a playoff spot this entire time.
That's why the Royals, but everybody, the trade deadline is exciting more than ever because so many teams are in it. Yes, it was a seller's market, but so many teams are in the hunt because of the extra wild card spot. I think it's a great decision by baseball. And as we said at the time when the rule change happened, and like, some people don't like expansion, but if you're in Kansas City, and we are, I don't know how you would ever be against the expansion of the playoffs that happened. It's great news for smaller market teams to have the wild card spot. All right, up next, let's talk with the general manager of the Kansas City Royals. Let's get JJ Piccolo's perspective on the three arms they added, plus the bat, and just how everything kind of came together, plus the second half of the season. That's coming up next here on
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Cody and Gold. Just getting started here on a Wednesday. Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp. Q producing the show. Reminder, at noon, we hand things off to Vern for his On Deck show. A little afternoon baseball. Royals going for the sweep of the White Sox today right here on 610 Sports Radio. Busy day yesterday in baseball trade deadline, and nobody better to talk to about that than the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, JJ Piccolo. He's brought to you by Technology Group Solutions, where purpose meets possibilities. JJ, good to have you on the show. Are you able to take like a deep breath a little bit after 5 o'clock yesterday?
Well, rolled home and watched our game. So just keep going to the next thing. But, yeah, we got a chance now with the draft being over, now the trade deadline being over, to catch our breath a little bit and, focus on the rest of this season and really start planning even for the offseason.
How does yesterday and even the weeks leading up to the trade deadline just all come together? I think it's interesting, at least for me and maybe our listeners too. You know, when another move happens from another team or another player and the compensation that may or may not be given up in that trade, does that have a serious repercussion on maybe there was a player that you thought was going to require more and then somebody else goes for less, so it impacts you guys? How does that, I guess, one move impact what you guys can do?
Yeah, well, there's certainly one move does impact other moves, and simply in acquisition cost and prospect value that's given up. There were some deals that were made that there was a lot of prospect value that was given up, and that drove up the price on some other guys. And, you know, as an organization, you have to make a choice at that point. You know, how far are you willing to go? And, you know, that's the balance. We're getting a chance to today look back through all the deals, and there's going to be some deals we're going to think that was a smart trade. They didn't give up a ton, but they got exactly what they needed. And there's going to be some we're going to probably say, yeah, we probably wouldn't have gone there. So every deal does have an impact on the next one for sure.
All right. So who is the player you thought you had then, JJ? You know, tell us the guy you're like, I definitely was trading for him.
There's a lot of players. So how about Lorenzen, Ersig, Harvey, and Young? They were the ones.
When you look back through those deals, JJ, though, I think you talked a little bit about it yesterday. How important was it when you were talking about this trade deadline? Because you want to be aggressive and prove to the players that they're worthy of trading for more players and that they're a team capable of winning important things this year, but also solving some future needs. It seems like that's what you did with Ersig and others, where you're telling yourselves, hey, we can maybe solve a problem this one and maybe check off something from the buy list in the offseason.
Well, if you take a look at our projected roster for next year, even taking like performance out of it completely, we're going to lose more guys out of our bullpen than we are anywhere else. So that was certainly a need, not only for this season, but moving forward. So trying to acquire pitchers, relief pitchers that had years of control was high on our list. And, you know, both Harvey and Ersig both represent that, Harvey through next year and Ersig through 29. So we were able to accomplish that. And, sending a message, you don't want to make moves just to make moves. You want to make moves that make sense. You want to make moves that improve your club. But this team has earned the right for us to go out and get other players. They've done the work on the field. They've played extremely well, and we wanted to help them to continue to play well. And then also even just our fan base. I mean, our fans are excited right now about what our team's doing. We have really good evaluators and really good ways of just evaluating our team. How could we make this team better so our fans continue to enjoy what's going on this year? So it was necessary for us to make moves. But again, it wasn't going to be moves just to make moves. They were going to be moves that would make sense for us in 24 and make sense for us moving forward.
It might be worth breaking down these players one by one, but I guess let's start with Ersig, since you mentioned he thought he might be a back-end bullpen piece for you at some point. When you say that yesterday, do you mean he could be a ninth inning guy this year and in the long term? Just kind of how do you see his role as far as leverage goes?
Well, he's done it this year. I mean, they have Mason Miller out there in Oakland, who's probably the best in the game right now. So he was pitching mostly in the eighth inning. But when Mason got hurt last week, Lucas stepped in and closed a couple games. So he doesn't have a lot of experience doing it, but he has the stuff to do it. He's pitching the eighth inning. And when you look at just how closers are developed, most of them start in the seventh inning, then they go to the eighth inning, and then eventually they get to the ninth inning. There's a process that takes place with every great closer in the game. And Lucas is on that trail. And the same can be said about Hunter Harvey. He's behind Finnegan. He was a setup guy in Washington. He had done it very well for a couple of years. He's going to have the opportunity to close. But the fact that neither one has truly been a closer, they don't have 30 saves in their back pocket in the past, we're just going to let that develop. I'm just glad, and the staff is glad, that we have two guys that now can pitch in the back end, and however it works out, it works out. But they're team guys. They get it. They're going to pitch wherever Q says you're going in. And hopefully by the end of the season, something is established and we have some consistency there.
We've already seen a couple looks at Hunter Harvey. Of course, he was traded a couple weeks earlier, and we saw him again yesterday. What do you make of so far what he's done for you guys? I know he had a little bit of a back issue prior to yesterday's appearance.
Yeah. Well, first thing is it's good to see him out there 2 days after, you know, he walked off. So that was encouraging. He's been a little rusty. You know, he didn't get a chance. And that All-Star break, he had pitched the Friday before the All-Star break and then didn't pitch again until I think the following Saturday it was. So that I think that took its toll on him a little bit. But I think with the more touches he gets, the more innings he pitches, the sharper he'll get. I thought last night was actually a really good inning, even though he gave up a run. I thought his stuff was as good as we've seen it, and it'll continue to trend that way.
When you look at some of the other spots, people are going to ask a question like, hey, who could you have targeted? When you look at what Hunter Renfroe has done for you the last 2.5 months, did that make it easier to not feel like a corner outfielder, which was something Royals fans are talking a lot about, JJ, to make it easier to think maybe that wasn't on the list?
Yeah, no, we're very comfortable with what Hunter's doing. He was, got off to a slow start, and now is, I think he's got over an 800 OPS since the middle of May. So he's producing at a very high level. Obviously, he's moved up in the lineup now, hitting 5 and 6 and getting some big hits for us. So it did make it easier. Hunter was going to be on our team one way or the other. But the fact that he's producing took a lot of pressure off of us to go try to find a super impactful bat. We're able to add a piece in DeJong that can help us in a lot of different ways because Hunter is going to be in the lineup, just about every day.
How often are you thinking you want DeJong in the lineup? Do you envision him as an everyday player, a 4 or 5 day a week player? Like, what did you and Q talk about his role?
Yeah. Well, one thing we've talked about, and we'll see how it develops, but, potentially playing some left field if needed. Third base is the most obvious spot where he should get some time. We got a guy named Bobby Witt Jr. at shortstop, so he's not going to play shortstop. So he'll get some time at third base. We'll mix him in at second base. It's part of the rotation that we run. It's not a set number of days a week. It's just matchup related. Who's on the mound? Who do they have in the bullpen? Who do we want coming off the bench? But he's going to factor in, whether it's a third, potentially in left, DH, or bat off the bench. He's just going to be part of the team and help us operate the way we want to operate.
We're talking to JJ Piccolo, Royals general manager, joining us here on Cody and Gold. We've seen different pieces get opportunities at the top of the order there. How much consideration was there even leading up to the trade deadline about where you guys are at with the leadoff spot?
Yeah, there was really just one or two players that we thought could have fit that bill. The trades didn't work out, and that's just the nature of it. But it was under consideration for sure. We'd like to get some stability at the top of the lineup. Right now, we got Massey hitting leadoff, and it's a little bit unconventional just because he doesn't walk a whole lot. Although he's walked a couple times since he's been in the leadoff hole. But what has been nice with Michael in that spot, he's coming up, in his third and fourth at bats in some big situations, and it's worked out well with guys on base that he's come up. But, to answer your question directly, we did look, we did talk, but we weren't able to land those players, and you go with what you got right now.
What's kind of your dream scenario there? Do you still kind of hope Michael Garcia proves that he's deserving of that chance again, or do you just, is it kind of like the bullpen for you guys, JJ, where you'll try a number of things until something sticks?
Yeah, that's a tough one to answer. I mean, I know when Michael was going good, it was an exciting 1-2 punch because the game could be in motion with Michael's aggressiveness on the bases, Bobby hitting behind him, both of them on the base together. We really like that. Michael, just coincidentally, I mean, he's a relative of Alcides Escobar. He's got some of those traits. He's a free swinger. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. We're hopeful that Michael will calm down. He seems to have settled in since he's moved down in the lineup. I think his at-bats have been better, and maybe eventually he works his way up there. So it's just going to be, keep trying different things until we find the right mix. But maybe at the end of the year it is Michael. Maybe Michael Massey settles in there right now. So I think we'll just keep trying things until we find the one that works best.
A couple days ago, I know you were asked about Michael Lorenzen, the move with the Rangers there, and what his role is going to be. And I don't know, post-trade deadline, now seeing what arm you also were able to acquire from Oakland, if it changes your view on that at all. But how do you see Michael Lorenzen fitting in? We know he's got 18 starts here with the Rangers, but could he be a bullpen guy for you guys?
Well, he's pitched out of the bullpen before. You know, I think our acquisition was with the thought that he's going to make starts for us, more so because we're very conscious of the innings that have been pitched by our current starters. There's a couple that are still, we think, very young in their careers, and they're going to start getting into territories they've never been in before. So if there's a way that we can manage this and really keep guys fresh, you know, keep them as strong as they can possibly be all the way through September and hopefully into October, you know, Michael gives us a chance to do that. Michael Lorenzen gives us a chance to do that. But it's also knowing that he can go in the bullpen and be an effective reliever as well. So he's a veteran. He likes to win. He sort of fits in with the personalities we have on the team. His background's similar. He's a team guy. So whatever role it is, we know he's willing to fill it. But he has made 18 starts this year, and that doesn't go unnoticed.
Is it kind of awkward when you, going back to the DeJong trade, is it kind of awkward to trade for a guy who's on the opposite side of the dugout? Does that make for a weird conversation when you meet the guy?
You know, I'm in Kansas City, so I wasn't there, but okay. I know the bench coach for the White Sox used to work with Q in Tampa, and he walked DeJong across the field over to the dugout, so over to the visiting dugout to introduce him to Q, and then Paul went back to the White Sox clubhouse, packed up, and went across the hall to our clubhouse. So it's one of those odd ones. You know, I even though he didn't get in the game last night, you know, you feel like you have an advantage for one game over most of these guys that were traded because he's playing in that game that night and he just happened to be across the way. So it was a different situation, kind of neat. It'll be a funny story he'll tell one day to his kids down the road.
I feel like he's got to be real, you know, like most players during the trade deadline, there's got to be a lot of excitement where you get kind of reinvigorated over the idea that you went from a team that didn't have a chance to compete to a team that's in a playoff spot.
Yeah, I think that happens a lot. And most of these trades that happen were players going from teams that weren't having a ton of success this year and two teams that are in the middle of a race. So I think there's a lot of excited players across baseball today that they're now playing the last 2 months, which are the toughest 2 months to get through. They will be reinvigorated and should bring some energy to their new clubhouse, whoever the player may be.
I don't think we can have you on the show, JJ, without talking about Bobby Witt Jr., though. I mean, my goodness, we are running out of like ways to describe what he's doing. But we were discussing yesterday that, you know, in other sports, maybe it's easy to say a player just takes over a game. We don't see that as much in baseball, but that's exactly what Bobby Witt Jr. did the other night in an inning stretch with that grand slam and those defensive plays.
No question. As soon as it happened, I was texting several people. I think we just watched like Michael Jordan finish a game off in the last 2 minutes. That's what it felt like. It just doesn't happen in baseball because you have to have the opportunities as a position player. You got to be, you know, in the batter's box hitting in the big situation, and then the ball has to get hit to you. So for all those things to align, it's just, you know, you just don't see it. But then to see the player come through the way he did, it's hard not to think of Michael Jordan or LeBron or whoever you want to, you know, comp it to. But in baseball, it's really tough to get those moments. And Bobby, he won that game for us. I mean, we were dead in the water and it was going to be a frustrating loss. And all of a sudden, great at-bats taken before. And I think there can't be enough said about those at-bats to get Bobby up, you know, to get him in the batter's box at that moment and give him the opportunity. But then for him to do what he did, just, I mean, it was a wild moment. And then he caps it off with the two plays in the field. So special player. And, you know, even last night, you know, I think there were so many things that went right on that play. Really well executed by Bobby, by Vinny taking second base, and then by Vance Wilson sending him. I mean, that's an exciting play. For me, that's the most exciting play in baseball. And I hope fans don't, you know, look past that play because you don't get a chance to run that play that much. But when the players are on their toes and they're thinking that way and they give you a chance to do it, it's really exciting to see. And it happened to be the winning run for us.
Sounded like Vinny called you out in postgame last night. Did you see the clip? He said, JJ, I've seen the clip. Yeah. I know that you guys, I know you've made me study it.
Yeah, somebody sent it to me, so I did see it. And, you know, pretty funny that Vinny said that. I'm really happy that he said it because we do spend a lot of time on that, and it's a testament to our coaches and player development. He didn't need to call me out, but that's okay. I'll take it.
He knows it's an important play to you, you know?
Yeah, well, it's there is a level of satisfaction when a player says that, and you know that he was listening, and others were listening, because again, we spend time on that. That's a big moment, and when you can do it, you know, the work that they did 5 years ago paid off last night and helped us win a game.
All right, JJ Piccolo, Royals general manager, appreciate the time, and get a sweep later on today.
Will do. Thank you, guys.
There you go. JJ Piccolo joins us every couple weeks here on the show, his regular visit. Plenty to address, obviously, with the trade deadline, to get his perspective. And we wanted to ask about the leadoff spot, too, because that's probably the question that we get a lot on the text line in the last 24 hours about the leadoff spot. And he acknowledged, look, that trades don't always come together, but it was an area they were looking at. It was an area they were looking at. They weren't able to make a trade. And now we'll see who ultimately settles into that spot. And Michael Massey currently is getting that opportunity.
It's going to be like the back end of the bullpen. It's going to be, they're going to keep trying things until something sticks. And like you said, yeah, it's untraditional because Michael Massey isn't a big, big walk guy, but has been walking a little bit more in this case, so maybe there's something to it. Little update from Chiefs camp. We're not up there today. The show will be up there Thursday and Friday. We're not there today because the Royals day game, the drive doesn't really make sense. Right. But two players have now been injured at practice. Kadarius Toney left practice earlier after coming down awkwardly on his knee. He left in the front of the cart, but made a catch, was walking gingerly, and then left up. No injury update yet, but Andy Reid is expected to speak to the media after practice. And Nick Bolton, apparently after injuring his elbow after a tackle, is headed to the injury tent. No update on his status yet, but he looked to be, according to multiple people who were up at practice today, in quite a bit of pain up on the field.
I don't like
that. So we'll see what the injury update is on Nick Bolton.
Don't like either, but certainly the Nick Bolton one. He's just starting linebacker, and in an area, obviously, you don't have Willie Gay anymore, and that would be really concerning if, in fact, it turns out to be something pretty serious. And so we'll
be counting on Leo Chanel and Drew Tranquil a lot.
Yeah, we'll wait to hear from Andy. The fact that it happened towards the end of practice, something tells me, I don't know how much of an update we're going to get from Andy on Nick Bolton. It's probably going to be like, yeah, they're still checking him out kind of thing, and we're going to have to wait. That's my guess, unless it's something that's turns out to be way more minor. If they think it's going to be more serious, we're not going to probably get a whole lot right away. But yeah, don't like that. Don't like that whatsoever. We will be back at camp tomorrow and on Friday, and we may have to wait till tomorrow, Cody, to get an update on the Nick Bolton front.
Nate Taylor said they're looking at his left forearm in the medical tent at the moment, but that's about the best we have so far.
Yeah, all speculation at this point.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
That's all we got. that's all we got at this point with that. I mean, if you guys have been up to camp, you know where the medical tent are, those two tents on the far left side. Not the easiest thing, and let you get some binoculars, you can kind of take a peek. Otherwise, it's not easy to see.
Should we get binoculars?
We don't need binoculars.
Some of the other people have them.
What do you want to look at? You would have got a better look at the guy jogging on the field after practice, Matt Araiza. Is that what you wanted?
I could have got a better look at Matt Araiza.
is that what you wanted?
That definitely would have helped in that moment. It could have helped hypothetically if we were up at camp today and taking a look. That's all.
Fair. From our angle, though, I don't know. I mean,
our angle kind of stinks for the medical tent. It's pretty far away.
Not the best angle for the medical tent. That's for sure. On a more positive end, though, some of the reports from Nate Taylor and other people out there, though, that Rashee Rice had a nice practice as well today. And when you think about the battles that we all knew about heading into camp, once again today, Kingsley Suamataia, first team, first crack at left tackle. Barring a huge shift in a terrible preseason game performance or something, or an injury, I mean, how is it not him?
It's Kingsley. Right? I told you the second it was like a co-job. Like, if you are in the job and it's like you're both getting equal snaps, you're both getting first team reps, and one guy is the second round rookie and you are the established second year player with less draft pedigree, you're screwed. I mean, like, not screwed, but like the job is already in favor of Kingsley, in my opinion. You're not starting an equal footing, even though it's 50-50, because of the circumstances around when they got drafted.
All right, Q, let's get to him, man. Some Q's.
Okay, today we're going to do what we've done all week. We're going to jump back and forth throughout a couple of sports.
Okay.
I want to start off with the Olympics again because I feel like it's relevant. An Egyptian fencer, Nada Hafez, I think is how you say her name.
Sure.
Revealed that she fought at the Paris Olympics while 7 months pregnant.
What?
She the doctor cleared her?
She seven months? You're not supposed to fly in the third trimester.
The doctor cleared her to fence at the Olympics.
She posted on her Instagram that she was, quote, carrying a little Olympian one.
What a badass. Fighting, like, that's a hell of a story to tell your kid. I was fighting in the Olympics at 7 months old. I mean, she wasn't doing, like,
no, but I don't care. It's physical activity.
Rugby sevens, but I mean, she was doing stuff. That's crazy.
Olympic sports.
Yeah.
Also, if your kid tries to tell you, like, no, mom, I don't want to put away the dishes. I was in the Olympics while carrying you. You will
did
put away
medal?
The dishes. So, yeah.
Do we know if she medaled?
I don't know if she medaled. I think that she did reach. She reached round 16 in the Women Sabres Monday. So I don't know if, like, it has continued. I don't know how the rounds work in fencing.
The venue for fencing, I don't know anything about it, but the venue itself, I don't know if you guys have seen the shots, like the aerial shots, and it's a really cool building venue that they've put it in. Like, some of the scenes from that particular event are actually really cool, but I couldn't tell you anything about the sport of fencing.
No, I'm just impressed that she was 7 months pregnant and still competing in the Olympics. That's wild to me. What do you got next?
Let's jump to the NFL, where an NFL executive told the Associated Press the league will test Sony's Hawkeye technology during some preseason games.
God.
The system most likely won't be fully implemented until next season, though it could happen sooner. This is to get rid of the chain gang in order to test out the first down marker. Hopefully, in the article, it talks about how they are hoping that it will cut 40 seconds off of each first down marker, so maybe we'll look to speed the game up a little bit.
Fine by me. What took so long? Hawkeye works great in tennis.
Fine with updated technology. It is crazy that we still use the chain gang. It'll always be there as a backup in case the technology goes down. That's why they're going to test it in preseason. I do think you sometimes you can laugh about it, but I actually think there is some drama at times, and maybe the Sunday Night Football animations can add to it and give us the same type of drama. Maybe they can have a digital chain for old time's sake. I don't know, but there was always drama where it took forever for the chain gang to get out there, and you're waiting for them to stretch it and see if it's a first down. There is the drama that gets built up from that moment. Yeah. So I think we lose that. That's the only thing that I don't know if I like, but in general, it is crazy that we're still relying on a chain that could break, or you got to use a note card. Like, stuff like that is not
I've
something
told
we
you,
should be doing.
They've made Hawkeye dramatic. Just do the same thing. Hawkeye is dramatic. It's like, whoa, yeah, it did touch the line there.
What was that again?
Save on, whoa, you know how it is. The crowd does the ooh and ah stuff. When you can do the exact same thing for the first down marker. I don't care if it's the yodeling guy from The Price is Right slowly inching towards the line and he stops short or he goes over it. The point is, you can do something television-wise to add drama to that. That isn't the chain gangs. You don't need people physically carrying chains.
No,
to get a first down. It's
during
crazy.
Preseason this year is weird. It's actually more intriguing than it has been. We joked about the Hall of Fame game tomorrow, but I want to see the new kickoffs. I want to see them utilize this. It adds a little bit what is normally a boring preseason outside of your own team and certain players you want to watch. Thank you, Q. Those are Q's here on a Wednesday. Up next, we are expected to hear from Andy Reid in the 11 o'clock hour, and now all eyes on the injury update and status of both Kadarius Toney and Nick Bolton. We'll keep an eye on that. We'll also get back into one thing that people need to stop saying about a former chief.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse rep. Number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.